It's now been 4 days since the attempt to assassinate Donald Trump. We're in the midst of the Republican National Convention. J.D. Vance was just announced as Trump's vice presidential candidate. And in the midst of this, Joe Biden is trying to gain ground with some left proposals like national rent control, erasing medical debt, reform of the Supreme Court. But in the midst of the crisis of his campaign, all this is really not registering with the vast majority of voters as he continues to stumble in interviews and prove himself unfit for office or for defeating Donald Trump. We'll talk here about the situation, how the left and particularly DSA should respond to it, but I'll turn it over for Philip to introduce yourself.
Hey everyone, I'm Philip. I previously was the co-chair of Seattle DSA. And I ran for the DSA National Political Committee at last year's convention in Chicago. Before that, I was the political director of Shama Sawant's 2013 Seattle City Council campaign, where she was the first socialist elected in over 100 years, and also her re-election in 2015. And we're now coming on the 10-year anniversary of winning, and I was a central part of winning the first $15 an hour minimum wage in a major city in the U.S. here in Seattle, exactly 10 years ago. Excited to be here talking to you today, Ty.
Yeah, my name is Ty Moore. I was the campaign manager for Tacoma for All's successful bid to win a major tenant rights legislation through initiative last year. I was previously the national organizer for 15 Now, and I'm a union organizer speaking today in personal capacity. So really excited to get this conversation going. Philip, you wrote about the situation after the attempt to assassinate Trump and his attempt to shift U.S. politics to the right in the aftermath of this. Let's begin there. Could you lay out your perspectives on the events of the past few days?
I think we have to say clearly this is a benefit for Donald Trump. Donald Trump has gained from this assassination attempt. This has strengthened his political position. It's rallying the Republican base around him, including there's a significant section, a minority, but a section of Republican voters who are unhappy with Trump, who could have might have stayed home or not voted for him. This really solidifies his standing with all the Republican electorate. And it also further energizes and radicalizes his supporters and his base. The other thing this is doing is, along with Biden's abysmal debate performance that you mentioned, this really further highlights the growing danger, the growing threat that Trump will be the next president. There's that's the most likely scenario at this stage, and tens of millions of people are grappling with that in shock and fear for everything that the consequences that means for working people, particularly for immigrants, LGBTQ people, women, the environment, and so much more. We don't know the motives of the shooter, as we don't know yet. That remains unknown. But I think we can say if they were motivated by a political agenda against Trump, this attempt will backfire terribly. These kind of destructive terrorist methods only do not in any way serve the working class or the oppressed. They actually demobilize regular people, and they create favorable political conditions for stepped up state repression. So, right. I think it's essential. The left in no way associates itself with this. In no way, it's not a good idea that the left treats this as a joke. If the shooter is connected with the left, which so far it does not appear to be, but if it was, the consequences would be no laughing matter. It would be a real problem for the left.
Well, let's move on to the GOP convention and the appointment of J.D. Vance and how this points toward a hardened right-wing populism, a strengthening and consolidation of the MAGA movement over the Republican Party. And this idea that Trump and J.D. Vance are saying that they are the true representatives of the working class, code white working class. How do you think this new development will play in the elections, Philip?
I think it's a smart move by Trump, unfortunately, and it will strengthen his appeal. I mean, we have to, on the left, we have to call it out as a fraud, that in no way does Trump or J.D. Vance represent working people. In no way are they prepared in a serious way to stand up to big business and the capitalist class. But they are rhetorically, and with some policies, trying to appeal to the huge discontent and anger that exists that's boiling up from workers and middle class people in the US, and that the Democratic Party is failing to connect with. And that leaves the space for right-wing populists like Trump, like J.D. Vance, connecting that with a nationalist appeal, with a conservative appeal, but also an anti-corporate, pro-worker, pseudo pro-worker message.
Right.
And so I think it's quite dangerous. And it highlights not the need, it highlights why we need to break from corporate democratic politics, and we need a bold, far-reaching, working class left-wing agenda that really speaks to the anger that people feel.
Well, let's get a little bit into that. I mean, Joe Biden, apparently in response to his own crisis and the situation in Trump, has just unveiled some, exciting, significant reform proposals for a national rent hike policy that would cap rent hikes annually to 5% for corporate landlords, a call for major reforms to the Supreme Court, and a call to eliminate medical debt. You know, these would be big, impactful reforms, but it seems like Biden's timing couldn't be worse in terms of these promises being heard or taken seriously by voters. Why do you think he's laying this out now, and what do you think the impact is going to be on the election?
I mean, it's a sign of desperation that the writing is on. Well, he's heading towards a wipeout and a serious landslide defeat in November. And this is a desperate act to try to fire up the Democratic base to make his own populist appeal. We have to say also, this is a fraud. Just Joe Biden and the Democrats are just as fraudulent. They in no way are anti-corporate. In no way are they a working class party. But they also feel the pressure of anger in U.S. society. He feels his own electoral pressure. And so he's gesturing to the left, trying to whip up a more and inspire his base. I think it's his only chance to defeat Trump. If the only way to get out of the discussion about his old age and his incompetence is if there were center political issues and there was actually real substance on the table. If Biden was to run on a clear agenda on those lines and other things like taxing the rich, a $15 hour minimum wage, a massive investment in affordable housing, and other popular economic issues, I think he would have a chance. And I think, under Bernie Sanders' pressure, he's moving in that direction. How much credibility does it have? It's after 4 years of being in office and not delivering these things. He promised 4 years ago a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Right.
The Democrats had control of the House and Senate. They failed to deliver it. So, it's a little late. It's his credibility has been undermined, but I think it is his best chance of trying to push back against Trump.
Well, look, before we move on to the kind of next phase of the discussion, any quick words about Sean O'Brien showing up and giving that speech at the Republican convention?
It's unexpected. It's not normal in recent decades. I think it is really it's really bad for the labor movement and for working people that Sean O'Brien's using his credibility and legitimacy as a leader of the labor movement to speak at the Republican convention and lend that credibility and authority to Trump. And it helps, it plays into Trump's hands and J.D. Vance's hands that they more and more want to speak as the voice for American workers against the global elite. And Sean O'Brien played into that. I don't think on principle it's wrong for a union president to speak at the Republican convention and go into enemy territory. I think the same principle applies, by the way, speaking at the Democratic convention. The Democratic Party is also enemy territory. And I think it's legitimate to speak at the Democratic convention or the Republican convention to use it as a platform, but only if it's a politically clear message that educates our audience. And if you're speaking at the Republican convention, you have an obligation to make crystal clear that the Republican Party and Donald Trump do not represent working people, poor people, oppressed people in this country. If you do not say that and you speak on that platform, You are damaging the interests of working people, and you're playing into the hands of our enemy. The same applies, though, for all the union leaders who speak at the Democratic convention. If you go to the Democratic convention, it's not wrong to speak there and use it as a platform to speak about a national raise in the minimum wage, about rent control, about Medicare for all, just the need to build a labor movement for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. That's all legitimate to say. But if you're speaking at the Democratic convention, You must say that Joe Biden and the Democratic Party is a capitalist party that serves the interests of big business, and they do not represent the interests of working people.
Which, of course, is the opposite of what the vast majority of union leaders do, which are just singing uncritical praise. Joe Biden's the best union, pro-union president in the history of America, and all this other nonsense. Well, let's move on.
I think one other thing about Sean O'Brien is, I think it also a warning sign. His speech did have a lot of union and working class politics and rhetoric in it. That is welcome to hear. It's unusual you hear that in front of a mass audience. I think it's understandable many workers will appreciate it. And there were good things he said, but I think a real warning for us is how much it was laced with American nationalism. And that was very consistent with the J.D. Vance, Donald Trump message. It was all about American workers. It was not a genuine working class message of working people all around the world uniting against global capitalism. It was about uniting and protecting this so-called great country and making America competitive and all that kind of stuff.
And that's in the midst of a convention that's been absolutely dominated with the most vile anti-immigrant rhetoric, you know, of just, you know, the invasion metaphor. They're not even saying metaphor, just rampant lies about crime and all of this other nonsense. They're preparing, you know, one of the most violent, terrible deportation waves in U.S. history. It's going to be a deeply racist, deeply repressive, and deeply anti-working class policy on immigration that's, you know, going to help strengthen the capitalist state under Trump, strengthen his authoritarian regime. And we should, of course, not expect that repression will end with immigrants. He's going to come after every oppressed section of U.S. society with the anti-immigrant message just being the tip of the spear. So it's quite dangerous. I agree. It's quite dangerous what Sean O'Brien is doing, and all the nationalist rhetoric that comes out of sections of the labor movement is a real problem. But I want to move on, Philip.
Yeah, totally agree.
The so-called unity against political violence that Biden and many other leaders of the Democratic Party, sections of the left, are calling for. This has been sort of a main message. We all need to come together across our divisions and oppose this. And of course, you know, there's an element of truth to that, but you wrote that the left should not be joining in this national unity call. Can you explain?
Absolutely. I mean, I think on one side, we should be clear that we have nothing in common with what really we have to say is an unhinged attempt to assassinate Trump that happened last weekend. And that even if the shooter had, and we don't know, but even if they had the best intentions, that those kind of desperate terrorist methods do not serve the interests of working people or marginalized communities. But the other side of it is obviously the capitalist establishment and their paid mass media. They are in overdrive, or at least the last few days. I think it's beginning to break down now. But the last few days, they were in overdrive about this is the time to put politics aside. This is the time to unite. We need national unity. We need to tone down the divisive rhetoric and push aside extremism. And that will get an echo. That's a popular message, particularly in light of the disturbing events that happened over the weekend. But we need to be, the left needs to have a backbone and be clear that there's nothing apolitical about that message. That serves a conservative political agenda to reinforce the status quo. And left leaders like Bernie Sanders, the DSA members in Congress, they have a responsibility to not be pushed around by that kind of propaganda, but to stand strong and make clear that now more than ever, there's a need. Yes, we do not support the kind of destructive violence that took place against Trump, but we are against Trump. We're not going to have unity with Trump. We're not going to have unity with the billionaire class. We want to unite working people, poor people, and all more marginalized communities to rise up in a mass movement, democratically organized, to overthrow the billionaire class. That needs for our message, and we're not going to back down in the face of their propaganda.
The last thing I wanted to talk about was exactly that. How do we actually build a movement that can defeat Trump and the MAGA movement? And, you know, why the Democratic Party appears to be so miserably failing to present itself as a viable alternative in the, you know, in the minds of most working class people. How do we build a mass movement and a new working class political party, which is, you know, at the core of DSA, certainly Reform and Revolution's message? Can you elaborate?
I mean, I think one thing that stands out, you know, just the complete hypocrisy of all these politicians who denounce political violence, is these are the same politicians, let's not forget, who are handing billions of dollars hand over fist to Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli state to carry out this horrific slaughter of tens of thousands of innocent children and civilians in Gaza. So they have no authority to talk about denouncing political violence. And that's the message we need to get across, that we need to build our own political party. Obviously, the right-wing Republican Party, it's clear, everyone on the left is clear that they do not represent us. But the Democratic Party is a softer, gentler version of capitalist rule that the Republicans also promise. And the Democrats are, at their core, a imperialist party and a party of U.S. Capitalism. And we need a left-wing political party that's going to speak out loudly and clearly for a ceasefire in Gaza, to end all U.S. military aid to Israel, to cut off the military aid to all the dictators and reactionary monarchs in the region, to bring U.S. troops home and close down the U.S. military bases in the Middle East and all around the world, and around a clear working-class economic agenda, Medicare for all, Green New Deal, raising the minimum wage, taxing the rich. And I think the way to do that right now is the clearest thing in this difficult election is to join DSA. It's a nationwide democratic member-run organization that fights against capitalism and for socialism. That you should join us in DSA in building a left-wing political alternative to the broken capitalist politics of the right-wing Republicans and Wall Street Democrats. And then also in November, we don't have great choices, but I think we have to, the best way we can give an expression to that strategy under the difficult conditions we face in November is to vote for Jill Stein, the strongest left-wing candidate running for president, we want the maximum left-wing protest vote. Jill Stein's not going to win. I think she's running a relatively not the most inspiring campaign. But with the options we have, I will be voting for her proudly to register a left-wing protest against Trump and Biden or whoever the Democrats pick to replace him, another establishment candidate. But I also think we have to take into account, while I'm against both Trump and Biden, there is a difference. And in order to stop Trump, who represents a more significant danger at this stage, I think in swing states, which is a small part of the country, around seven states, I think it does make sense for DSA, for socialists, for the labor movement to vote to stop Trump in those seven swing states. And that means voting for the Democratic nominee to Biden or whatever establishment stand-in they put for him, with no support, with no illusions, with no donations, with no endorsement, with open political criticism of saying we want to build DSA, we want to build our own movements like the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, the labor movement, and the socialist movement. But yes, and unfortunately, we're not strong enough this year to run our own nationwide presidential candidate who can win. And this year we are going to, in most states, vote to protest against those options by voting for Jill Stein. But in those few states, strategically, tactically vote for the Democratic nominee to block Trump while making our emphasis be on joining DSA and building our own political forces so we don't have to face this kind of disaster again in 2028.
Well, thanks a lot for the discussion, Philip. I think we touched on a lot of important topics that really are at the core of left socialist strategy in the months ahead. For people watching this who want to read more, we're going to leave some links in the show notes. Philip wrote a widely distributed article in the immediate aftermath of the assassination attempt against Trump. It's been translated into Spanish on Jacobin Latin America, into Portuguese, and in the left in Brazil, and got a pretty wide circulation on social media here in the U.S., so folks should definitely check that out, as well as other links we'll leave. So again, thanks a lot for the conversation, and solidarity.
Thanks for having me, Antai. Look forward to doing this again and getting out more Marxist analysis and commentary. And I also, really encourage people, everyone watching, drop a comment, give us your feedback, give us your thoughts, questions, criticisms, and share it with people you know.